hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. You can ignore my panic in the...
The link panic?
Yeah, it is the right link. Last week, y'all were all in one place, and I was in another, and it was a Zoom room, and I don't know what happened.
I cannot wear my trademark hat and these headphones. It's frustrating.
No, it sucks. You need, like, the headphones that do this. They come across the back.
Yeah. I've had these puppies since, like, mid-90s when I was recording rock and roll music.
Or you need to use, like, these.
Yeah.
I'll be right back. I'm going to go get my drink.
Yeah, I need to hit the ladies before we go, too.
We're all banded.
Got to get my drink as well.
Yeah, well, you're on time this time, so we're all going to abandon you.
Oh, there we go.
Oh, Ben's like, what the fuck? Everybody left.
Yeah, well.
All right.
Okay, I'm going to turn off my window unit, which is loud. So my forehead will get shinier and shinier as you go.
What the hell's Hawk got going on?
All right, cool. I love you. I'm going to start my meeting.
Oh, and we're recording all this, of course.
Of course.
Luke, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello, hello.
Oh, no. No?
Yeah, we
I can hear you.
We can hear you.
We hear you.
Okay, good, good.
Tonight, I'm using my Galentine's glass in honor of the community topic.
All right.
We all went to Cirque du Soleil before everything got shut down.
Oh, nice.
I've discovered this, and it makes me want to start drinking hard liquor again.
Uh-oh.
I'm not, but it would go so good with rum or vodka.
I'm coming through all right, right? Okay, yeah, I see my love.
Yeah, you're good.
You're good there in your tropical paradise.
Tropical paradise, man. Living the
I'm
dream.
I'm getting a little bit of the tropics in my office right now.
What time is it out there, Vin?
10:30.
Okay, cool.
10:30 a.m. Yeah, it's nice.
10:30 a.m. tomorrow. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's Wednesday. So we might, I mean, we're fully in the, well, not fully in it, but we are definitely in the rainy season as of the last couple of days. So it could happen at any time. Like, I'm looking out and I'm seeing, you may see the wind pick up, and then it'll get real dark, and then just go down on me for like 5 minutes, and then it'll be like bright, sunny.
Yeah. I mean, you're way out there. You're closer to China than you are to Hawaii, right?
Oh, by far. Okay. By far, yeah. It's like a 4-hour plane flight to mainland China.
Okay.
Maybe 4.5. So, like, Japan's even closer, obviously. Korea's pretty close. Yeah, it's easy. Like, Australia's not that far either. Australia's about the same distance as China from us.
God, if I would have known about that when I was 19 and I got out of the Army at 21, I would have been there.
right?
Yeah.
Holy
and
shit.
Philippines is super close, dude. Like, and half the population here is Filipino. So, like, you hear Tagalog more... Or as often as you hear English, really, around town. So,
cool,
yeah,
man.
It's cool. It's a cool location, man. It's, like, super chill. And there's, like, The government would really like there to be like a virus crisis here. The government would love it if that was the case, but there's not. There hasn't been a case that's come from on island since we got here.
Yeah.
In April.
So, wow.
Yeah, not one. I mean, they test people at the airport now.
Yeah.
So they'll like get one, but there hasn't been anybody with symptoms. Yeah, since April.
That's awesome.
That's great.
Yeah. So they can't even use that as an excuse. They would love it. They would love to do it because they get FEMA money to do it. But and they live on the FEMA money because they have no ability to collect taxes in any reasonable way.
Right.
So it's pretty. They're pretty shiftless. So they just basically the entire government process is like it's funny to watch like the local news and. It's just a fight over like all the government contracts, disaster funds, the casino community fund. Like it's just nonstop them fight. That's all they're doing is fighting over like the gifts that they got. They hauled the director of public safety, so like all the police, basically the police commissioner. They last week hauled him in front of Congress and were like. Why do both of your sons work here? And like, weren't you supposed to recuse yourself from hiring and all of this? And he's like, he can barely like form a sentence. And he's like, half the people here are my relatives. So what do you say about that? And then they were like, wait, no, sir, decorum. The guy's trying to, he's like, look. Is this how it's going to be? This how it's gonna be? Okay, I'm out. And he just got up and left. It was awesome. I'll send you guys the video. It's fucking hilarious.
That's great.
And that's how it is.
I'm always late. I'm always late to the
party. I don't know what's better about that. I don't know if the story's better or Vin's attempt to do the guy's accent.
Yeah. No, dude. My attempt at his accent is not even as good as his accent. When you see this video, you're gonna be like, holy shit, that's the police commissioner. And then, and then there's a follow-up. So the follow-up is, so he's all pissed off at them, right? So then my buddy who lives up on Capitol Hill, which is where all the government buildings are, he's like, dude, there's a ton of cops up here. They're all dressed in, fatigues and they're rolling around in like the Bearcats. Like, what's going on? And then, Department of Public Safety was like, oh yeah. Don't be scared if you hear a whole bunch of flashbang grenades and smoke bombs going off by the Capitol. This was a planned exercise. So all night long, they ran around with guns at the Capitol building, throwing smoke bombs and doing all of this. And it was like the tantrum that was being thrown by the police commissioner. So that's how it is here. That's how it is.
I read one article by an expat out there that described it as a broken paradise.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That seemed like a pretty good description.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's what it is, man. That's what it's the reason why it's broken is because the federal government just gives them money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If they didn't do that, it wouldn't be broken. But all you get is like all the politicians is just like, who's the best grifter? And all the families, they elect whoever is the best grifter. And the whole thing is like, because they're like, who will get us the most money from the stupid mainland government? Like who can go in there and snow them and get us the most money? Okay. Yeah. This guy. And so they're all like, you look at them and you're like, oh God, these guys are dumb criminals, but they managed to get the money. So
who's
awesome.
The best Tom Sawyer?
Basically. Yeah.
That's yeah, what it is. All right. Yeah. So
I'm having trouble finding a problem with that, actually.
I'm saying, man. They leave me alone, so I'm cool.
Do you have a community out there? Do you have a group of people, expats that you're, like, associated with, people in the same businesses?
Yeah, so that's why I came out here. There's, like, this group, this crypto frontier group that started.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and so then now it's growing. So locals, too. A lot of the locals who like left and then said they would never come back, but came back recently. A lot of them work for the government. And then, all the lawyers and doctors are everything and everything are all from the mainland. So we hang out with a lot of them too, and they all work for the government as well, like the Attorney General's office and whatnot. And they all see that this, it's so dysfunctional, the government, right? So, so every Sunday we have like crypto meetups once a month. And then every Sunday we have a barbecue that's been growing. Last Sunday it was like, there was probably 40 people there.
Wow.
That's pretty badass. Nice. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Probably. And so,
maybe we can talk a little bit about that tonight when we talk about community.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think your three big hitters on this one are Vin with what he's got going on, John, who's going to MC this, and Nicole, because Nicole has taken a different approach, and Nicole has a hell of a community around her. And it's...
I'm getting a surprise one. I can't say who it is yet. We got
Nicole does it in a very nefarious way. She gets you to move there and then makes you a member. It's too late. You're fucked. You're already there.
Got nowhere to go.
Live in like the Tennessee mountains, and if you go too far outside of her area, you start hearing banjo music and shit. So you gotta join up, man.
We're neighbors practically. That's what we got going on here.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. So John's going to run things tonight. Is there any like things we want to figure out before we start?
I'd like to know if there's like a specific order, how you guys planned that last time. Cause when I just jumped in, it was like, we already have a format. So I want to make sure I'm.
Well, you were late. So now you're fucked.
Yeah.
You just have to figure it out.
All right. Fine.
we're all shooting from the hip.
Okay. Cool.
John's in charge tonight, and we're going to rotate who's in charge based on the subject and who's not done it yet or whatever. Anybody else got anything we want to hammer before we. No?
Yeah, you said you had some housekeeping. Maybe I'll just do an intro and then hand it over to you, Jack, for the housekeeping, or what did you want to cover?
What I was talking about is between us for housekeeping. I just said we could do that if that's what I'm asking right now. Is there anything anybody wants to iron out or all before we start? Among us.
No. I don't know much what anyone has to say, but I'll just top it off and we'll just go spontaneous style. It's usually the best. And
okay.
All right. And we're just talking about community, how to build community, planned community, spontaneity, and a lot of takeaways, to-dos kind of stuff.
Well, let's do, like, if somebody has something to say and you kind of want to go next, just maybe a hand raise, I think, is a way to go. That way we can kind of keep some sort of not jumping on top of each other or whatever.
Yeah,
maybe we need a cue when I talk too much. Like, scratch your, if somebody does this, that means I'm talking too much.
You want to say something?
What we need is a goose.
Nicole's neck is going to be like freaking red.
Blood red.
Yeah, that's where I can hit you, like Jack.
Can you guys see me doing the raise hand thing in the participants?
It depends.
There is like a little raise hand thing.
I can see.
Oh.
I can see it, but I don't know if everybody else can.
I can't
see it. That.
Only the host can. Do you want to make? I think you can make me the host.
Okay.
And then I'll be able to see people raise their hand.
How do you do that?
You go to participants.
You go to participants.
And then
you see raise hand on the bottom.
Oh, I see it. I see it.
Oh, I see.
And then you just go like that.
Yeah, John, you're in charge.
Can you see my hand now, John?
Oh, I'm the host. You guys are screwed. Okay, I see your hand, Vin. Yep.
Backup recording today? Because
you guys got goose sounds? We need goose sounds. We need like a goose horn.
Still don't see I'm confident.
It's at the bottom. So you open participants and then look
down. I see
down
that.
So you should see invite, mute me, and raise hand at the bottom of that.
Invite, mute me, duh. Okay.
In tiny little letters you can barely see.
Like, please! Yeah, but, ooh, Mr. Cotta! All right, cool. I got it.
And
I'll do the record. I can record.
You're the backup. The cloud should work fine, but if it doesn't, we'll reach out to you.
I need record permission.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I can't do that, John. You have to give him record permissions, I believe, now.
Okay. You're the guru now. I'm going to have to get one of these damn conference rooms.
Allow record for Vin. There you go.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
You have the power.
You got it?
All right.
You got it? You're good? And then to sign up for email on the website, is there a pop-up or what's that?
Upper right.
Upper right contact, get updates from the flock.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know if it's a blocker or something, but there's nothing there for me.
What?
Can someone else check too?
You know what? Are you using the JavaScript form, Nicole?
No.
He's probably blocking Java instead of the HTML form. We can change that later.
It's the HTML form.
Are you sure? Because that's probably not true.
I'm going to check Chrome real quick.
Well, it was in the... I thought I pasted the HTML and not the Java. But.
Page source.
It shows up on Chrome for me, not on Firefox. It must be some sort of blocker I got going.
It's JavaScript. I'm looking at the code.
Yeah.
It's Java.
Yeah. I can go back in. I just copied the wrong thing.
That's nice because if you change it, it automatically changes everywhere you have it. But yeah, that's the Java. It's JavaScript. I'm reading it right here.
My bad.
No worries. We'll change it later. Just tell people to fill it out.
Tell people to use Chrome.
I'll still plug it. Well, we can fix it before we produce.
I can fix it right after this call.
Sorry, we're not live. That was my one thing. Not tonight, obviously, but do we want to maybe in the future start planning on trying to do these live, or is that just...
Yeah, like a live stream?
I'm with it.
Yeah.
I've been recording my podcast live for a while, so people love it.
Yeah.
Does my mic sound good, guys? Check 1, 2. Hey, hey.
Yeah.
Ready to go. All right, sweet. Okay, cool. All right, well, let's fire it off. All right. Thank you so much for checking us out. You're tuned into the Unloose the Goose podcast with the Goose Group, where weekly we're going to be bringing you all sorts of insights and tips and tactics and laughs all about agorism and how you can live a free life. And we got a wonderful group here joining us today. We got the one, the only Jack Spirko, Nicole Soss, Ben Armani, Xavier Hawk, and Pete Quinones. And today the topic, which is a topic that was brought to us by some of the listeners and viewers of the previous podcast, is all about community and building community and how community can help us to be more free. And we're going to share some of our personal stories and insights and tips on how you can find more freedom and safety and security and camaraderie through community as well. Before we get started, I want to invite you to check out UnlooseTheGoose.com. UnlooseTheGoose.com. I still smile when saying that name. It's just a great, fun name, and we're a wacky gaggle of geese. So UnlooseTheGoose.com, and I want to invite you to sign up for our email newsletter where you'll get updates whenever we have new podcasts, and you can find all the previous episodes there. There's also a video, and you can subscribe to us on all of the various, most if not all of the various podcast little subscribers. So community is something that's very important to us. Unfortunately, community and social organization in general, what most people are used to is coercive government. And I think we could all agree that that's probably one of the single, if not the single most, the biggest inhibitor of human flourishing and human growth. And it just, like Ernest Hancock says, there's two types of people in this world, those that want to be left alone and those that just won't leave you alone. And unfortunately, again, we got that government that's just all up in our business. But thankfully, there's a very rich history in America and all across the world, really, of intentional community, micro communities, people experimenting with alternative forms of social organization. And so that's some of the stuff that we want to share today. We're going to do a fluid conversation today, so we hope that you'll get a lot out of it. And I think most importantly, we hope you'll be inspired to go experiment with some alternative forms of community yourself. So I've been a huge advocate for building these alternatives for quite some time. I was involved in quite a lot of political activism for a while, and it just felt like banging my head against the wall, not actually advancing freedom. And so one of the things that we started doing was encouraging people to participate in small groups, small affinity groups, mutual aid groups. And that's where we came up with this Freedom Cells idea. We'll talk about more about it later, but I want to encourage people to check out freedomcells.org and participate there. But maybe we'll start off by people on the group here sharing what their sense of community is like. I know Vin has a expat crypto community down where he's staying. Jack's built a community around the podcast, the survival podcast. So who wants to share some of their insights and maybe some community that they've experienced, how it's enhanced their lives?
I mean, I can start out, I guess, and maybe I can get it in before the wind really picks up. We're in the rainy season here in Saipan, so if you guys see it start to dump on me, the people who are watching, you'll know exactly what's going on if it just starts to get dark and then there's rain. I've been, you know, in our last episode, it really occurred to me, and I mentioned it on that episode, that the solution is community. But I think the solution is always community. And the difficult part of this moment that we're in is, how do we, and maybe this is to start out framing it as I've been thinking about this topic, I think that one of the real issues that we have right now is the landscape that we're in is quite, if we're honest with ourselves, this is unprecedented, certainly in our lifetimes, and maybe in terms of the modern history that we have, in terms of what's happening in, with the global culture. So, you know, one, our level of interconnectedness is clearly unprecedented. I think most of us here are old enough to remember a time without the internet. So that's, but my children, those of us who have children, our children can't really say that and won't be able to say that. To them, the world has, will always be a totally interconnected place, which means there will always be a global culture. And right now, our global culture is clearly going through a crisis that is unprecedented. And the point of community, you know, the point of culture is to help a group of humans to survive and thrive within a particular environment. And whether that environment is a geographical environment, whether that environment is a social environment because you've created some sort of a subculture to protect your religion or to protect your wealth or your property or your person, a mutual aid society within another culture. In order for that culture to work, and certainly for it to be intentional in any way, you've got to have some grasp on the environment. And right now, I think the biggest problem is trying to get a grasp on that environment, trying to get a grasp on what is the social environment in which we are going to plant these communities and what are the seeds that we need to plant. So, you know, I came here to Saipan, part of a very, very small, like nascent community that's quite open in terms of what we're doing, but we're geared around cryptocurrency. So at least we have some totem to sort of circle around, but the rest of it is really open. You know, we're libertarians, free marketeers for the most part, but not everybody. But we're still struggling with, as we try to put our roots down here, constantly coming back to the old strategies that we've had. A lot of us, several of us have lived in New Hampshire, been part of Free State Project or other, you know, sort of intentional liberty communities. And as we are constantly finding ourselves having to stop because these tactics are not going, not all of these tactics that we have thought would work are going to work out into the future. And we're really seeing that with a lot of the stuff that's happening in terms of, you know, the breakdown of order in many places, the breakdown of rule of law. And so, you know, one of the things that I would like to hear from people today and that I would like to explore is how do we get a grasp? And it, maybe we can't, but how do we get a grasp on what the social environment is right now such that we can even say, okay, what is the nature of the soil, metaphorically, the social soil? What is the nature of the water? What is the nature of the sunlight so that we can actually pick which seeds we're going to start planting in which places for which communities to extend the metaphor out that way? 'Cause I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, and it's something that I'm struggling with on a daily basis as I watch this thing unfold. But I just don't feel what I feel to my core is that the old organizational structures and the old ways that we've approached this as liberty-minded people, libertarians, anarchists, whatever you want to call it, I don't think are going to be effective and might actually be counterproductive. So like to frame it in that way to start out, that's really what I would like to know is how do we even start to assess that environment?
So do we even need to assess that environment? That's my question, because when I think about community and developing communities that support each other, the ones I see that are most successful don't have a lot of top-down organization. And you cited a couple where I think part of where they've fallen apart is there are so many different perspectives in them, right? And there's lots of fighting and there's lots of attempts to control the fighting rather than attempts to navigate ways to have conversations with each other. And to understand that, like, I can be friends with Vin and not agree with Vin on everything. And we can, like, violently disagree about things and still be a community and act together if we have some shared principles and a high level of trust. So, I mean, I raised my hand to talk, but I wasn't thinking about responding to that. But if we're going to form communities like that, to what purpose are we forming the communities? Is it to support overall flourishing? Is it to preserve knowledge and understanding? What is the purpose?
Jack, here, let me kind of chime in on that, because I was kind of thinking the same thing. Like, Vin actually hit it in the beginning of his stuff. And for everybody else, when you speak, at least for the first couple times, say who you are, because we got a couple of comments on that. Like, some people don't know all of us. Anyway, so when Vin was talking there, right, he was like, well, you know, we don't really have like this huge thing that binds us all together, but it kind of sort of coalesces around a sort of libertarian thing and a sort of cryptocurrency thing, right? So I know right away, if I have a community that has some binding around cryptocurrency, there's going to be a lot of synergy. And that synergy results in humans self-organizing and getting things done and doing the things that they do. And that's a lot of what Nicole's been able to do up in the holler, right, is by having people that are there, it doesn't really matter if they all agree on exactly what they're trying to accomplish in the world. It matters that they all agree on what they're trying to accomplish in their own lives, which is based on just where they live, right? Just where Nicole lives, anybody out there has a certain bent toward independence. And I've always found like the best groups seem to coalesce around a common ideal, but they're not put together for like, we're going to fight the system. Cause we talked about last week, like if you get into anything and you're like, I'm going to pick a side, I'm going to fight the system, I'm going to fight the man. The way this thing's rolling right now, you get kind of in the gears and you get ground up like grain in a grist mill. And so what we need to be doing is figuring out how do we build as much freedom into our lives. And what I've always said, and kind of like, so I don't know, I used to call a group of pigs a sonder. Maybe like we talk about being the gaggle, maybe we also kind of need to be a sonder, because I've always said that the problem with most people is they do get in groups, but then they behave like cattle. They're like a herd. And I can't remember it was a Roman emperor that said something to the effect of, you can easily move the agitations of the crowd with a few words to where it resembles the beauty of the sea. Like, all you have to do is like put this little thing in motion. You can watch the crowd respond. And that's because we act like cattle. And if you take a cow and you put a cow on a ranch, you can, if anybody knows what a cattle guard is, it's these pipes that are spaced apart. So if the cow's trying to walk across it, it hurts their feet. And that way you don't have to have a gate, and the cowboys can just go in and out in their trucks, and the cows don't get out because they'll step in that cattle guard. Once a cow knows what a cattle guard is, you can paint black stripes on cement. They won't test it. They won't test it. Once a cow is trained to an electric fence and they see a wire, they're not going to touch it. They don't go feral. You get a pig, that pig will test the fence, it'll test the wire, it'll test everything every day, and if it gets one chance, it's gone. And so our groups need to kind of be built around this concept of, we pick something that we're all gone for, and then the parts that we don't necessarily agree with, let's just focus on our lives. And, I mean, Nicole, I want everybody to talk, but tell us just a little bit about your community of people and kind of how that plays into that.
Okay, I'm Nicole Sauce, for those who don't know who I am. And it happened a lot by accident. I've always been somebody who has been motivational to people. And I thought if a redneck hippie duck farmer could start a podcast, certainly I could. So I started one, and people started listening to it. And then they started interacting with me. And I thought, wow, I'm not alone. I'm not the only person trying to build stability into my life by living in a rural setting and coming up against these barriers and trying to figure out how to bust through them. And what happened is I met three or four people who had shared ideals, one of them at your workshop, Jack. And we just became friends, and we all came at the community from an invest in the community standpoint first. So you have to make a deposit before you can take a withdrawal. And we
all lead with the relationship.
Right. And the relationships are key. We all understand where the line is between what is my business and what is none of my business. And that's a really important line in a community, because I think where you see a lot of breakdowns is somebody wants somebody else to live their life differently than that person is living, and it's none of your business. And we don't have people stay who want to get up in other people's business because it's not welcome. And that's the culture of the community. Well, as I've told the story on my podcast, people have thought, well, Tennessee sounds like a cool place. So they started moving here. So now I have two next door neighbors who came through the podcast and moved here. And we all work almost like a family, but we live in different houses. Like we share meals. We work on projects at each other's houses. And then statewide and over the state, we have a bigger community that does what we call GSD weekends, get shit done. And, well, if somebody wants to put in an aquaponics system, we'll go for a weekend and all do it at one time because many hands make light work. And then, of course, I do have a mystery third neighbor coming in soon. So it's been interesting seeing this happen because what's happened because of my podcast is my house has become part of the hub, but I'm also in the middle of the state. So we will end up at other people's houses, but people drive back and forth all the time and just pull over and they know they can get a cup of coffee here from the Holler Roast coffee machine. And you know, even if I'm really busy, if you're in the GSD crew, you can just stop by. You know, if I'm busy, I'll work and I'll ignore you. I'll say hi. But yeah, so that community has turned from just getting stuff done to pushing through crisis. My biggest challenge now is how are we going to communicate if all the communication systems go down and things like that? Because when we had a tornado this year and had no comms here, nobody knew how to check to see if we were okay. We were fine, but they, you know, the tornadoes hit near us and nobody was able to get on social or phones or like the landlines were out. Everything was out. So.
Unmute yourself.
You're
John.
Muted, John. You're
yeah,
muted,
you muted
John.
Yourself.
Look at that.
Would you, the goose.
Would you say there's some core values that the members of your group and your community share? And it sounds to me like this was more of a spontaneous thing, although you inspired people to move. They were attracted to what it was that you were sharing. But what I've noticed is that even when groups have a shared value, like the Free State Project, for example, yeah, there can still be conflict and stuff. So I'm just curious if you could elaborate on, are there shared values that y'all have? Has there been conflict within your group? And what's the cohesion like?
We've had one major event where somebody is no longer in the group. It wasn't a big dramatic thing. It's just transitioned out because it was not a good fit. And I think that's the worst thing. We have little things where, you know, somebody doesn't agree with somebody, but I think the shared values we have a foundation of encouraging self-reliance. So taking care of ourselves and our families and our community. We have a shared value of trust and doing what you say you're going to do. So we don't have a lot of people saying, I promise this, and then not living up to their promise. And I think that's really important. There, and it's partially because of the personalities of people here. There are people who will just come out and say, this is bugging me, this thing that you're doing. And so we address that up front rather than a lot of talking behind the back or talking around the issue. I mean, there are times when it takes a few weeks for somebody to get around to it, but I think just having, and then a lot of us are, well, we're either all anarchists or anarchist leaning, I would say. Either coming in from the left or the right, everybody sees that you know, that big picture shared core value that the top-down government approach isn't working, isn't going to work, still hasn't worked, no matter how many times they say it will be better next time. So, and I think that helps. And we just love to have fun. So it's important to have that element.
What about you, Xavier? You're involved in permaculture a whole lot. Have you found community through permaculture? I know there's a lot of intentional communities that are all about permaculture.
Yeah, what's interesting is that I have a number of different circles, let's say, a number of different communities, and they all operate on different principles. Like there's one that's very much yoga, you know, and they garden and they're into herbalism, but their focus is yoga and then well-being and balance and all that. And there's the hardcore gardeners who are really into knowing all of the herbs and everything. And there's so, like, there's that common totem, like Vin was saying, where there's a common thing that everybody's interested in, a sort of way of having fun that they enjoy together and learn together. None of those communities are actually interrelated in so much that like they don't require one another to survive, let's say, right? Where Nicole is, there's a certain sense of like we're actually doing things together and our livelihood is coming from our collectiveness, you know, like that happens in business and it happens in a bunch of different circles. But as Vin brought something up in the very beginning that I thought was pretty poignant, and it was, you know, how do we come up with a baseline culture for the planet? Because we are becoming an interrelated, super connected civilization now. And there's this like struggle between collectivism and individualism, right? And there's a need when a community grows into a next level society or civilization for that collectivism. But along with that currently is that tyrannical collectivism. And that's what I think we all here don't want, right? So it's a matter of not just what are we interested in having fun with, what do we survive with, but also what do we fundamentally appreciate about our lives as? Are we sovereign individual beings that strive for a higher sort of perspective or way of existing? And that's what community builds. We get to play out different stories, relationships, and, you know, refine the soul. Whereas if we didn't have those communities, we'd be survival, right? There wouldn't be any of that Maslow's hierarchy. So as we're, as a species, trying to figure out, are we individualist? Are we collectivist? And what's the best way to organize that? And how, like, does somebody need to sit on top and organize and tell everybody how to do things? Or are people sophisticated enough to actually manage themselves and manage themselves in communities? I haven't seen very great many examples of that, besides some really, you know, poignant ones, but they're the minority in the larger scope of things. So the question for me is like, how do we build that to be the majority? How do we educate people and build their sophistication to a point where they can be responsible for self-governance?
Hmm.
I mean, we all here are, you know, because we have strived in our own lives in different ways to achieve that. There's some yearning at our spirit level, let's say. And so how do we invoke that in the greater community? You know, how do we keep those small relationships that have happened at Nicole's level and then like the governmental stuff that Vin was talking about earlier, you know?
You know, I was part of a group or part of the starting of a group. I didn't start it. I helped them go to the second step called Liberty on the Rocks. I don't know, John, if you've heard of them or Pete.
Yeah, they're in different cities.
Yeah, so they're basically, it's a cocktail hour once a week, and it is for people who have a shared value of like political perspective of liberty. And when they first started, their one rule, there are two things you did. One was buy somebody else's drink. You don't buy your own drink. And then the second was no speeches. and it cut out all, because it's politics, right? It cut out all, I need to come to your group and tell you my thing. And that's something that worked well for them over time.
Yeah, that's good.
So on one of the things that Xavier was saying there, this is Jack for the podcast audio only side, about like how do we, you know, share these values or get these values out. And we, you know, that started off with John asking Xavier a question about permaculture. And I find that interesting because one of the things that I've learned about like spreading permaculture or just gardening or anything is the best way to do that, instead of telling people about it or saying, hey, look, my way is a better way, is you just do it. You do it and you document it and you demonstrate it. And so the only thing I have to do to get somebody to want to plant a garden is bring them over here, let them walk through my gardens and be like, holy crap, and hand them a sun-warmed pepper or tomato. And they eat that.
Yeah.
And then it's like, how do I do this? And then, okay, now you've given me permission to evangelize to you about the thing that I value. And you'll actually listen to me because you want it. And I think that the more we can build these communities and demonstrate the power of these communities, then we attract people to them and they say, well, I want to do that too. If you think about most of the people listening to tonight's episode that heard announcements about what it's going to be about, they're here because they want to know how to build community. So we have their permission to share those values. And I think as soon as you start, one, I want to put a community together, and two, I don't really want the government providing my solutions. I think you almost have enough synergy there, and then let 1,000 communities try 1,000 ways instead of us deciding, hey, what seeds do we want to plant? As Vin was saying, we take the Masanobu Fukuoka solution, and his way of reforesting the deserts was get every damn seed, screw worrying about invasive species, make clay balls full of seeds of every tree of everything, and just carpet bomb the shit out of the desert and see what grows. And then you'll know. And I think that that's kind of what we have to do with these communities. Like, if we have one giant community, then you have a target. Like, why hasn't the government shut Bitcoin down? There's not a building that says a big B on the roof, and you can hit it with a cruise missile, and Bitcoin's gone. It doesn't work that way. The right. more decentralized this stuff is, the harder it is to get your arms around an attack.
Yeah.
So I want to, like, this is Vin. This is Vin. Like, I'm hearing something that's really resonating with me, particularly from Xavier. You just really articulated it, but I think Nicole was really touching on it with saying that, like, her house was a hub for all of this. And Jack, I think you hit it again. And then with the Bitcoin situation. So as somebody who's, like, involved in the blood sport of the Bitcoin community, like, I know that a lot of people believe that, like, yeah, Bitcoin has these no points of failure. I'm going to let you know that while it is decentralized, and while of course anybody can fork the repos for Bitcoin Core or Bitcoin ABC or Dash Core or any of those, they're not, because at a certain point, with all communities are decentralized, right? But at a certain point, like Christianity was decentralized, but at a certain point you get a church, and when a church gets big enough and a community gets strong enough and there's enough network effect, those who desire influence, either for good or for bad, right? If they want to move, those people who want to move the principles forward, they can have the most effect by being involved in the quote unquote church, right? Those people who want to gain power, they can have just for their own selfishness, they can do that best by getting involved in the quote unquote church. And I think that I know it's a lot of this is nice in theory, but watching an open source community in practice turn into the Bitcoin community in particular is what I'm talking about, which is completely open source, mind you, turn into an absolute cathedral with real leaders who claim to not be leaders. I think that takes it from out of theory and puts it into practice. And, like, you know, I think, Xavier, you brought up something that's, like, very, very, it's touchy, and I know you kind of glazed over it a little bit, but the idea that perhaps there has to be leaders. Like, perhaps somebody has to step up and say, actually, these are the values, right? And whether it's in a more informal sense, like, Nicole, the fact that, you know, you're able to say, this is the hub, and I say what goes on in my own house, and that sets the tone of the culture, down to, you know, something deeper. I think that's worth talking about, especially since the people listening now are the potential leaders, that I think we need to have a conversation about, when do you take the reins of leadership? What does that mean? Is it a bad thing? Is it a good thing? You know, we've all been leaders of communities. What are the steps that we've taken on our own? I think that's, like, we can't gloss over that, and we can't pretend like that doesn't exist, because it really does.
I want to make sure Peter has a chance to chime in on this too.
Yeah. This is Pete. I'm glad that Vin went where he did, because
yeah, I want to say something to that too. So,
I'm going to play Debbie Downer here, because does anybody hear?
We need a goose sound. We need like a goose button.
Does anybody here think that there are people listening to this right now who are like, yeah, we can get this community together and something could go really wrong?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody who.
Something will go really wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The shirt I'm wearing right now says, remember Mount Carmel, Waco, Texas, 1993.
There you go. There's something really wrong.
And there's 78. There are 78 names on the back of the shirt.
Wow.
And what most people don't realize, I study Waco. I know the whole history. I mean, I go all the way. I can trace to the founding of the Branch Davidians. Is that one of the reasons they got on the radar, the ATF, is because years before, there was a guy named George Roden there who was a complete maniac. And he ended up in jail because he killed somebody. But he put the ATF on he put the Branch Davidians on the radar of the ATF. So people are listening to this and they're thinking, great, these communities sound great, but they can attract attention. So what do we do to make sure that something like that doesn't happen?
Yeah.
So I wanted to speak to what was before, but that's a pretty intense question. good God. So the way I structure our neighborhoods is the way that we're building them is that they're a neighborhood, intentional neighborhood, you know, and there's a central point of commerce. And then there's a governance mechanism where people don't have to sit around in a room 24 hours, you know, discussing a specific topic and dealing with people's personal idiosyncrasies, right? You can do it online with an app. But, you know, I think of golf clubs, right? Like a neighborhood, like in South Florida, right? There's golf communities where they are all centered around a golf course and there's a central clubhouse and then a gate, right? And it's like, you can buy a unit in there, but if you adhere to these certain rules, and it's sort of agreed to upon before you enter in, right? And at the level of like Waco, I would say that there's an intensity of relationship in that kind of a community. Because they're all praying together, they're all having altered states together, there's a leader that they're following whose, you know, ideas may or may not be okay, but will go along because we're part of the cattle, like Jack was saying earlier. So there has to be like clear boundaries, I would think, and a comfortability of culture, and then you could actually build something in that regard.
I want to respond to what Peter was saying about the, you know, the risk that everyone takes, especially if, you know, we're anarchists, we're obviously anti-authoritarian, and that comes on the radar of the government. If you're just out, you know, doing a volunteer group where you pick up trash, that's not going to be a community that would come under their radar unless you cross the street without going to the crosswalk. But one thing that really encouraged me to start really leaning into the development of these communities was precisely because the government is so corrupt, coercive, and I guess it's kind of like running head on to the beast. A lot of people would want to run the other way, but I think that there's an important maxim that there's strength in numbers. And even people that are trying to go about their business or their life, there's so many felonies out there and there's so many misdemeanors. People are constantly breaking the law and people are constantly coming under fire, under scrutiny, police brutality, so on and so forth. So at the end of the day, even if we're not organizing in a community or creating a compound and stockpiling weapons and, you know, doing militia training out in the woods, people are still being harmed really negatively and being killed, in fact, by the government. So the reason why some people would avoid joining a community is the reason why I think that we ought to join and build communities. And that's part of the reason why we started this Freedom Cell thing. And essentially it's small groups of around 8 people. And there's this research, this guy, John David Garcia, this guy, Bob Podolsky, they found that a group of 8 tends to be the most creative and the most effective at achieving goals. Whenever you have like 4 or 5 people, there's not enough people to get things done. There's not enough uniqueness and diversity of ideas. Whenever you have like 16 or 12 people, then there's more conflict and there's less group cohesion. And so the idea essentially, and this is a framework that any other community or any other political philosophy, for example, can take advantage of. You get your 8 people, your inner cadre, and then you guys work on mutual goals. You help one another. You perform mutual aid. Then you encourage the creation of 8 other groups. And then these 8 other groups link up in what we call middle cadre. Maybe that's in a certain geographic area. And then you encourage the creation of 8 other groups of 8 that are maybe across a region or across the state of Texas, for example. And these people all help support one another. And the group that we have going, that not everyone's networked in those specific groups in that structure, but there's 2,400 people now that are participating in this network. And back to the question of leaders and followers, one thing that this guy Derek Rose and I are the ones that I came up with the idea, and then he really popularized it and just spread it all across the globe, actually. But we found in trying to encourage these groups to get more organized, even though we want it to be like a leaderless thing, people are still looking for direction. And some people are even looking to have their hand held. So there's that struggle and that tension whereby we want people to feel responsible and to take ownership in this concept and this great idea. But at the same time, I think it's just a natural thing where there are natural leaders and there are people naturally that will follow. And there's nothing wrong with that. And there's nothing unlibertarian about that per se. So I want to invite people to check out our group at freedomcells.org. And there's a map where you can find if there's people in your area. And you might be surprised if you think there's no one in your area. There's tons of people all across the globe, like I said, but maybe we can, if anybody else wants to chime in on the whole follower leader dichotomy thing and that tension there. Go ahead, Jack.
Jack here. I want to say a few things. First, let's go all the way back to Vin's stuff on like Bitcoin and fighting for control and leaders and it becomes a church and what have you. I'm not sure. I know Vin is a huge philosopher, but I don't know if you're familiar, Vin, with the Iron Law of Bureaucracy from Jeffrey Pornell, the late Jeffrey Pornell, who just recently departed us. But the Iron Law states that in any organization, especially of any size, eventually you'll get a dichotomy in that organization of people that are either dedicated to the mission or dedicated to the organization. And the people dedicated to the organization will end up controlling the organization. They'll get all the promotions. They'll make all the rules. And they'll become diametrically separated from the people that are actually out fulfilling the mission. And those people will become very ineffectual in what they're trying to do. Look at a school system. Administrators and teachers would be a perfect example.
Libertarian Party is a perfect example.
Oh, yeah. LP is a dumpster fire, in the words of Pete Quinones, right?
One thing I can say is I was going to mention the fact that probably the closest thing I've ever been to a cell, a freedom cell, or a group, tight-knit group is, and I don't really talk about this really ever, is I've done overseas mission work. And one of the problems with that is a lot of times it's not really the mission. People start getting attached to the leader.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big problem. That's when people start losing their autonomy and somebody can really jump in there and lead you down a bad path.
Yeah. And I think we give too much over to leaders, but I kind of want to walk through all of these things as quick as I can. So the next thing was like Pete brought up about like the Branch Davidians and what have you. And what I've determined is you can have a group and not be a target, and you should have a group and not be a target. Don't make a target out of yourself.
Right.
One of the problems the Branch Davidians had is largely they had all these people living in just a couple buildings. It was complete cohabitation, and that makes it very easy for it to look cultish. Whether it is or it isn't, it looks that way. So communes are out, and I like tried to put together something like that. At one time, I kind of took some testing of the waters, and I had like $12.5 million of potential capital raised in 48 hours. And I was like, I'm going to go do this thing. And a guy from the FTC came to a thing I was speaking at that next day and said, I listen to you. I love you, but they will put you in federal prison if you do it the way you're planning on doing it. And I was like, well, I'm not going to do that because of the way I was going to raise the money in such a way that there would be an active revenue share for the whole thing back to everybody. So I was publicly soliciting funds with people I didn't have a pre-existing relationship with, even though they were my audience. And
oh, the SEC. Yes.
Yeah, the SEC, yes. Not the FTC. SEC. So the SEC, they will throw you in Club Fed. And I said to people, you should do it anyway. I'm like, you're not the one going to Club Fed, right? I'm not going to Club Fed. So, and then I walked down a whole different way, bunch of ways to do it. And every time I looked at doing it, the more I thought about doing it, the more problems I saw, and the more I saw that we were a target. So I think you kind of stay away from that. And like Xavier, you're talking about you build neighborhoods around a common ideal. That's different. Now it's my house. It's my house.
Right.
It's my property, even if we don't have fences and we share property. And this has been done. The best example I know of in the world of like regenerative agriculture, permaculture, sustainability is Village Homes in California. And that was done years and years ago. And those houses are worth four times what a house across in the next subdivision is worth. And they have that very, very strong community feel. And basically the whole place is full of food.
It's just added services in the neighborhood. Instead of building around a golf course, you build around a farm. You know, it's simple.
That makes it harder to lower the burden of entry for people, but people have to have a place to live anyway, so there's an expense to that. Yeah. There's also another community in California, I don't remember what it's called, it's much smaller, and it's much more on the lines of what Nicole did. And what they did is they kind of picked a neighborhood, and then they like went in and bought a house, and then they bought another house. And then they took the fence down, so they had one big yard for two houses. And then they just started every time a house went up for sale or somebody kind of looked like, hey, you know, maybe you want to move, right? And like, yeah, all the crazy hippies are coming. Maybe you want to get you a good offer. And basically they ended up taking over a whole block. And the whole thing is like fenced in one giant backyard. And all those now, but it's not really a target. On the last thing, though, of like leading and when to lead, it depends. And I think that like John's approach of these smaller groups makes the way that works effectively a lot more likely to occur. So if we have a group of 5 or 6 or 8 people, we're all going to know each other really well. It's not like, oh, you're here to see Jack. Well, maybe he'll come out like, and I have handlers or something and there's, you know, 50,000 people out in an audience or something. And like, you get to see me and there's like a, like Scientology where you've got like an inner circle and a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger. You have to work your way to that leader. You know, the leader is great. The leader is good type thing. Mm-hmm. If you're 8 people, like we all know each other. And, you know, basically if John and I are in that group and he feels like telling me to fuck off, he'll tell me to fuck off. Right. I'm not Saint Jack. And I'm not going to be St. Jack. And that's, you know, that's a good thing. And so if you avoid that iron law, then it's a real simple rule for leadership. You lead when you are the best person to lead for that time. And when that time or that thing stops, GF out, right? Get
it's
out of the
based
way.
Based on merit.
Right? Merit. We do workshops here. Nicole's been to them. Vin's been to them where we'll have a project going on. And all of a sudden, like, you realize somebody like, oh, he's done this before. And I'm the instructor. I get the fuck out of the way. I'm done. Mm-hmm. Like, let him go.
Yeah.
He knows what he's doing. And as soon as that's over, like, okay, we need this. Okay, well, I'll take that back over. And then somebody else takes over. And that is the way that tribal systems generally work. Even if you had a chief, when you were hunting, you had the best hunter. When you were farming, you had the best farmer. And people who knew who that was through merit. It was a meritocracy. But it wasn't the leadership wasn't authority. It was a duty. And that is that takes a certain amount of humility, you know, and everybody here is kind of an alpha personality or we probably wouldn't be here. So for the ideal leadership candidate is always that kind of alpha personality. So you have to always be checking yourself. Is it time to stop? And I think it's
Wait, how do you scale that? How do you
you don't.
Scale that? That's the problem. Well, you can. No. There are ways to do it. They just haven't been designed and implemented yet. But the fact is like you have to have accountability as well. Right. So there's a neighborhood. Two things. There's a neighborhood right down the holler, and it's the oldest intentional community in the United States. It's called CeeLo, and it was a bunch of Quakers that got together, bought a big tract of land, and made their own community. Not a target. They have a hospital. They have a school, like really well functioning. Sure. Check them out. But then it's how do you scale merit? And like Facebook has been trying to do this. LinkedIn has an approach at it, right? It's like they're good at this and this because so and so and so and so who are good at that say that they're good. You know, there are attempts at building that. And like you can go and look at products on Amazon and you can see like, oh, that's a shitty product because there's like 12 reviews on it and they're all bad, you know. So there are ways that we're all looking at building that. But we're, you know, how do you go from that community of 8 to like 8 pods of 8 and then 8 pods of 8 of those and be able to manage that? You know, that's an interesting question for me. And Ben, what you'd said about Bitcoin, it's like people don't realize that there are 6, or at least when last time I checked, there were 6 main coders for the blockchain, right? And they all work for the same nonprofit. And then if you look at mining, it's mostly owned by big Chinese mega corporations at this point. And if they wanted to fork it, that's what they do. So it's really vulnerable when you don't have that leadership to hold that together and kind of get everybody going in the same direction. All you have is like the wild wilderness growth instead of a permaculture garden, you know?
Well, I mean, to jump on 2 of those, you actually sort of hit on, you like amplified something that I was noticing and off of Jack's comments, it seems like everything that we've talked about, and I want to jump back to Bitcoin just because, I mean, that's a community that is generating and has generated globally a lot of wealth, right? And is set to generate even more wealth. And, you know, we're all users of cryptocurrency and we all know how powerful it is. But what I've heard so far that we've talked about is we've talked about communities in person, right? Like IRL, in real life communities. And it's like, while I am also participating in those and while I do believe that that is incredibly important, when we talk about how do we scale this thing, in the modern age, when we talk about scaling anything, I mean, we are immediately talking about this going virtual, right? Like even now, even us being able to have this conversation, I mean, we're not in person. The reason that we're able to scale this conversation to potentially millions of people is because we're able to do this remotely. And, you know, when you talk about Bitcoin, yeah, that while you have those developers, whether it's protocol developers, wallet developers, whatever it is, very few of those people are in the same place. Very, very few. I mean, with a few exceptions of, you know, some of the Bitcoin core guys working for Blockstream or whatever and like all working in one office, still a lot of them are not in the same place. So I am a little bit skeptical of the power of in-person communities and the communities that we're talking about, which I think is where it has to start at a nascent level. I'm a little bit skeptical of the power of those communities to even insulate their members, you know, in the next 20 years from the power of the communities that are developing things virtually in the way that we are doing it now. And why wouldn't somebody step away from one of those in-person communities, you know, especially if we're talking about things like cryptocurrency, 3D printing. I mean, but it may even go further into things like agriculture, when the makerspace moves into the organic, which I think is going to happen very, very soon. How do we, like, outside of saying to somebody, well, you got to move here, you know? That's what we're experiencing right here, right? I would love everybody to move to Saipan so that we could be next to everybody, like it's got to happen. But besides saying you got to move here, or you got to come here, or you got to do this, you know, to what degree are the people listening to this podcast right now part of a community or not? Like, where does the line get drawn? At what point are you in, and at what point are you just an observer? I think that's a really important, we have to bridge that gap if we want to scale. I don't know how to bridge the gap. I've been doing this a long time, and I still don't know how to bridge the gap fully between, like, you know, everybody who's in the audience is now in the community without coming in person.
Yes.
So I'm glad we're making that turn, because I wanted to make sure we kind of covered virtual communities and physical communities both tonight. That's really important to me. Most of my community is virtual. My community is all over the world, but it's also made up of hundreds and hundreds of sub-communities that have formed, and then some of them have kind of left the nest and gone off and done their own thing. And this is something that, as a marketer, and I mean, that's how I built my success with my podcast, is by effectively marketing it. I did what I tried to get big brands to do that they would never do: let go. They wanted to control everything. I had so many, I mean, you're sitting with like 12 self-important assholes in $5,000 suits around a $50,000 conference table, and they tell you, I want to go viral, but I want to control it. And you just, I want your money, so I don't want to say what I'm really thinking is, which, fucktard, you can't do that. Like, you either go viral or you control it. You can't do both. And if you want a movement to go viral, you have to be willing to let go. So virtual communities, what I see happen, destroy them, is dictatorship. So we do have communities that we actually describe as voluntary dictatorships. We have one around regenerative agriculture. But when we say that, we don't really mean like, well, I'm in charge. We mean like there's kind of like a proto-constitution. Like, here's the rules. This is what you can and can't talk about here, because it's about this thing. And here's how you have to treat each other. And other than that, do whatever you want. And when somebody's like, well, I'm going to do whatever I want, we ban them. And that's one of the beautiful things about virtual communities. Like, if I move you to my next door neighbor and you end up sucking and I got to get rid of you,
oops,
right? You're complicated. If you are part of a Telegram group, and, you know, we're using Telegram to communicate back channel, I really recommend people within this community. We're going to put together a Facebook group this week for Unloose the Goose. Don't really do your stuff on Facebook. They're not your friend. Find people and break off and create your own Telegram channels and things like that that are encrypted. But create these subgroups and then just build them on common values and let that see where that goes. Because if you think you can tune into a podcast, and even with this group of people, we can tell you do A, B, C, D, E in a computer community that does great things pops out the other end. It doesn't work that way. Everybody here that's ever built a successful online virtual community has built 10 that were flaming dumpster fire disasters as well. So we kind of have to take the law of large numbers into account here. And I mean, I've proposed things as grand, and I would love to see it happen. And people have taken stabs at it, but it just didn't work yet. Like virtual nations. Like, why can't we self-assemble into virtual nations where we, because a nation and a state are different things, and a nation does not have to be physical, right? There are religious nations that are built on that community of faith that act as like kind of a global distributed nation. And one thing I'd love to get Vin to do, because he has such a great mind for stuff like this, I know permaculture is not your big thing, but the permaculture design manual is broken into 14 chapters. And when you teach a permaculture design course, each day you teach one chapter. The 14th chapter is called Alternative Strategies for a Global Nation, right? And it has a blueprint for how you do this at the physical level, but I think it could be extrapolated out into the virtual level. And there's a thing in that strategy and in multiple of these diagrams that Bill Mollison came up with called LETS, which are basically like Ithaca hours, or like you make your own money to spend. The only reason that crazy old man didn't say to use cryptocurrency is because when he wrote the book in 1989, it didn't exist. If you put cryptocurrency into that, that chapter of the PDM is exactly what we're talking about skinning, and then you just take it to a virtual world.
That's what permacredits was designed on, building communities and doing that exactly what you spoke about, right? So that's what we're doing with FireOn. There's this whole like mark of the beast. People are afraid of transformation and change. And there's like things that are just coming. I mean, we've got quantum computers. We've got AI. We've got things that are going to happen. It's not like, oh, we have to put that back. There's no putting it back in the box. So the matter is, how do we manage that? How do we manage those tools in a responsible way and in a way of accountability and make sure that they're in the hands of the right people, or at least create an island in the sea of tyranny that is a example of what a good civilization run by intelligent, proactive, accountable people could look like?
Well, I guess the other question is, in the digital world, are not the same kind of good leaders and bad leaders going to become apparent, right? We have already got the digital communities up and running. They're already there. We already have tools that work. We can make it better. But if you look back at how successful in-person communities work, it's the same foundation. So to me, it doesn't feel as hard, other than it's easier in a digital community for the bad element to get too much power faster.
But it's also easier, as Jack was saying, I think it was Jack, just to shut them off. Yeah. Whereas if you're in the same territory, then you kind of have to figure out a way to make it work. And yesterday, or the last podcast, Vin brought up this great thing that took us down a rabbit hole about this new age that we're experiencing, this big shift that we're experiencing. And I didn't get to mention it, but after the fact, I was thinking, I think one of the big dichotomies that we're going to see between the old and the new is centralization shifting into decentralization. And that's how things have always been done, in a centralized way. Well, I think it went from decentralized tribes, you know, and roaming folks, and then it got centralized with the advent of the state and the nation state. And what Murray Rothbard says is, it's whenever like the Vikings and the pillagers, they decided like, hey, instead of going from community to community, why don't we just stick around and tax the people? And that would be a lot easier, you know, and a lot less energy. But I think the big transition is going to be into this decentralized, and there's going to be new experimental forms of governance and of association that are going to be non-territorial. And I think we're going to see traditional governments and states, which are dependent on geographic monopolies on violence and all sorts of services, they're really going to have to struggle to innovate and either innovate or die, or they're just going to continue to coerce everybody. We know they are. But I think that's like Jack always talks about, how these industries are getting really hammered by COVID, but really it's just accelerating the inevitable. And I think one thing that we're seeing with this virtualization of community is now everyone's being forced to stay home, and everyone's getting used to the Zoom, and everyone's getting used to the telecommuting, and the kids are getting used to the going to school on their computer. So I think it's really just accelerated that. And, you know, I like the in-person human connection. That's not going to go away, but there is a lot of opportunity for experimental communities and creating alternatives to government that we're going to see springing up all over the place. It's an exciting time to be alive.
Opportunities and threats.
Yeah.
I think there's a big thing in what John's saying there about the COVID killing and dying. The word I've been using over and over in every place, the disruptions were already coming that are now being accelerated. So there's a lot of bad in COVID. Let's talk about some of the good, even though it's going to bring misery because it's going to cause a freaking economic recession, possibly depression, is the test drive. So when John was talking about like homeschooling, my estimates based on all the data I'm looking at, is we're going to have between 5 and 15 million new homeschoolers from 2020 to 2021. Right now, there's 2 million. To give you an idea of that exponential growth curve, post-secondary education colleges, they're going to get ripped. There's over 6,200 degree-granting universities in this country. If they go to a mostly online model, how do you support 6,200 universities?
All those buildings and stuff.
Why would I go to the University of Sheboyganville, right, if all of a sudden I can go to UTA or, you know, University of Texas or something like that, a big school that people know for half the price? I wouldn't. Like, the only reason people go to all these little satellite universities all over the place is why? Because that's where I got in. You know, it's the level of school I want, and they let me in. Well, what if any level you want will let you in because you have the grades? And so there's so many things. Like, you're talking about Zoom conferencing, et cetera. People are using technology they never used before. Well, all of a sudden, they can start using that for self-organization. The problem is the government will like Vin said a long time ago on my show. It was really a great comment. He said something like, the government cannot win a technology war because two guys in a garage can compete with them. But what they can do is they can make whatever technology is in vogue by subsidizing one group really popular and really easy and dumbed down at the GUI level to the user to where it becomes the de facto monopoly, and then they can surveil that. Then they can, you know, collect data on that, and that's something that we have to be, you know, really cautious with. And one of the things we maybe need to be doing as leaders is teaching people about using alternatives with encryption and things like that. Because on encryption, just because I hate the state, I think you should encrypt everything you do. You send your aunt a picture of a kitty saying, hang on, baby, encrypt that shit, because then they have to devote effort to decrypt that cat picture. And if it takes their computer 6 months to get that cat picture, like, you can grind down the beast, but we have to educate people into ways to do that.
Yeah. No, I think that's like, there's an opportunity for community that I have really seen, like, working in the Bitcoin and blockchain space. I mean, you know, I myself have released encryption libraries that are not, like, within this year that people are now using heavily in Bitcoin Cash. And it's like, with my own kids, what I've said is, you know, why? Certainly, yes, and I think the people listening, this is Vin again, by the way, I think the people listening should be thinking about the fact that, okay, if we're going to have this homeschooling, this is the, like Kanye said in his little campaign rally, pause. This is pause and take a minute to breathe. That's what this COVID thing is. Pause. Take a minute to breathe. What do we really want and what can we get now? What can we achieve? Because all of us have paused and we can reset. And I think one of those things is educating our children. And certainly I've even experienced that here, is that one of the things that is cohering the community that we have here, there's basically two things. One is, for some reason, all of the guys, or maybe that's why they've coalesced into it, but so many of the guys are married to Russian women, myself included, right? So, like, all the Russian women get together, and that means that every Sunday all the husbands are at the barbecue, and it just turns out that we're all very useful to each other in all of the things that we're doing. That's kismet. Okay. But the other thing is kids. And, you know, I think that there's no better binder when it comes to community than, you know, you're educating your kids are participating in sports together. You know, you're whatever it is. And we're seeing this move, but, you know, the fact that math education should be like, let's have that be the end. Like, by the time they're of high school age and are getting out, they could literally write the math for Bitcoin and reconstitute Bitcoin and do the cryptography and write a Bitcoin transaction and mine a Bitcoin block by hand, which is possible, by the way. And it's not even really all that hard of math, right? But moving from this idea of they're going to be sheep to moving to the idea that, yeah, if you were a high school graduate and you could do that, not only would you be able to pass your AP mathematics test with flying colors, but it would have been to a purpose. Like, how do we use this? We use this for money, buddy. Money. Like, you see this that you're using right now? This is it. You see this of hiding this message so nobody can see it? This is it. And I think that's one of the reasons for this pause. Like, we have this opportunity that, like, that's a principle around which to swirl a community. And a strong principle, like, we're going to educate our kids. Well, what are we going to educate our kids for? Pause. Why don't we step back and look at all the things that we're using and empower our kids in that way? That's the decentralized way of doing it.
So there's an interesting thing there when you bring up kids, and I'm back to one of my fiction books, the one I mentioned last week by Piers Anthony called Isle of Women. And as you read through that, for those that didn't get the episode last week, basically it's this family that starts out at the dawn of civilization and they get separated and they kind of journey through two different paths through reincarnation at different times in history. It's very, very fiction based, but it's also very historically accurate. And as they come through kind of like the time of Carthage and stuff like that, they start talking about how, like, as wars and battles would happen and different groups would take, you know, slaves, or actually maybe not like with children, they might even just take them in and adopt them. And these children were kind of put into these communities of learning from all these different backgrounds. They actually evolved language. The children created all the evolution of language. And that's incredibly plausible, because go talk to a 15-year-old and sometimes you're like, what the hell is this kid talking about? Right? I mean, you know, I mean, like, you know, and I understand why my grandparents looked at me the way that they did when I was 15 and they heard me talking, like, what is this kid talking about? And so imagine if you're actually taking this multicultural discipline of children and bringing them together. Well, if we can start to coalesce our communities and realize that, like, the time to expose our children to these ideas, like Vin is saying here, is not when they're 18, it's when they're 8, right? And then let them develop the communities, because they're better at it than us. You put like 20 adults in a room that don't know each other and they're all like, you put 20 kids together, they're all on the couch playing with each other, right? I mean, and they work out their own hierarchy, they just do it. So adding to that though, Vin was talking about like the math and the coding and all, I think that's freaking cool. But I was also thinking, like, pretty smart guy, but when I was like 16 years old, I would have been like, you know what? That's cool, you know how to do that. Teach your kid how to do that. He could do that shit for me. I have all this other cool stuff that I want to learn. So if we're going to take control of our children's education, there is a core level of knowledge and understanding of math and science and reason and logic and the trivium we need to teach our kids. But if we can identify the things that they're passionate about and send them down that path and put them in groups and say, since you're really passionate about this, you take this on and you do this thing. And since you don't really give a shit about how to code Bitcoin, but you want to use it, your buddy over there, you guys talk about what you want it to do and you figure out how he can make it do that. And Dad and Uncle Vin will get you some help and bring in some extra guns for that stuff if you want it done and you can't quite figure something out. And all of a sudden, now you're taking that virtual community, you're putting it on steroids, and you're handing it to the next generation. Instead of trying to build it and leave it to them as inheritance, you're actually empowering them to build it because, you know, folks, they're going to be fucking better at it than we are.
Yeah,
we really are.
We're going to be the equivalent of have to fix Granny's VCR so she can see the movie, right?
And we better get that shit right, because we're all getting older and we're going to need them to take care of us. You know, I mean, we really are.
Well, I think along with that, Jack, though, the thing we have to show our children, and I don't have children, I just get to influence other people's children and nieces, is how to be leaders that can also follow.
Yeah.
Because leadership does not have to be dictatorship, but the models they have are that the leader is the authority in the front of the room telling you what to do and how to do it. And it's hard to bust that. So then when they become a leader, they think they need to stand in front of the room and tell people, you know, the virtual equivalent of that, what to do, how to do it, rather than, as you said at your workshop, identifying this person's better than that. I can back off.
Yeah.
I can hand them what I've got, let them go.
Yeah, I think that's it. Whether it's ourselves or whether it's our role in a community or whether it's raising children or a tribe's children or whether it's a government or a hierarchy, just like Jack was saying, the letting go and really the checking of the ego is so important. And I think if people can just move past that, and hopefully that's one of the elements of this big transition that we're going through, I think spontaneously something more beautiful and more natural and more free will evolve. But there's this strong innate desire in so many people, myself, us included, to control. And I think a lot of it is based in fear and, like, you know, arguably we're living in a trauma-based society where there's so many terrible things that happen. There's so much violence. There's so much war. So people feel out of control. So in turn, they want to control. And, you know, I think that the government that we have, which is really coercive and tyrannical, it's a result of social engineering and programming, public education having a lot to do with that. But it's also a reflection of the people that exist within that society. And so I think as more and more people check their ego and are willing to let go and just kind of see what happens spontaneously, and maybe this is an intergenerational thing that needs to take place, I think we'll be able to arrive at something that's a lot more in line with human harmony. I think I kind of got deep there, but I don't know if that made sense.
John mentioned tyrannical government there, and I have an article that's dropping tomorrow where I ask the question of, through this whole COVID thing and then just very easily jumps right into the whole George Floyd thing. I mean, it just, it's very weird. Is the government right now a wounded animal that's just lashing out? You look at what happened in Portland where they're sending in the
Department of Homeland
Border
Security.
Patrol. Yeah. Well, it's a Border Patrol, their paramilitary group, which is normally fighting cartels in like South America or looking for terrorists. Is this a last gasp? Is this a wounded animal that is trying to hurt somebody? What are we looking at right now? And what can we plan for?
Well, that's my hometown you're talking about. So I've been in a lot. I've actually been paying attention to that more than I usually pay attention to those kinds of current events. The interesting thing I read about today is to protect the protesters, a line of mothers put their bodies physically between the sort of paramilitary people and the protesters. But what you've got going on over there are two sides that refuse to waver from their perspective, to even try to find common ground. And it's, that's the thing when Vin's talking about digital communities and banding together. And when I'm hearing about handing it over to the children, that's the thing we're really fighting. In that case, both sides are wrong, because they can't find common ground, and their solution is to become violent, and it becomes revolution. And at the end of revolution, what do you get?
More government.
More government, dead people, tyranny. You don't get a bunch of freedom and happy, fun-loving walks on the beach. And that's the thing that actually motivates me to come on this podcast. I want to learn from y'all. How do we push back on that with our communities? Because it's kind of like the mask argument. You can't have it. You can't actually have a reasoned discussion about a freaking mask right now.
No.
Which is absurd, you know?
There's a lot of underlying things going on there that are manifesting in that. But like what Jack had said, so we are electric beings. We have electric currents holding all of our cells and molecules together. The Earth has an electromagnetic field and it's getting all wonky. So everybody fundamentally at a super subconscious level that they're not even aware of is all freaking crazed out because they don't know what's going on to the very firmament that they are on. And they don't even know how to put that into words yet. The second thing is what I think Jackie would said about it. It's like two groups always form within a group, right? The dichotomy, the North Pole and the South Pole, those who are holding the system together and those who are expounding the proponents of that system, right? And that there's always a disconnect. And you can look at like the Republican kind of way of things. And that's sort of like the system controllers. They want to run the system. And then the Democrats are like, we want to expand it into what humanity and liberty is supposed to be and explore all of that. And right now there is no agreement because there is no trust because both sides are doing crazy shit. And it's that interplay of electricity at its most fundamental level that we are sitting in the middle, you know, yellow flag of the goose, like don't fuck with me, you know, like we want to take a very balanced approach and balance the two polarities and make something beautiful.
Yeah, leave us alone turns into fuck around and find out really fast, right?
It really does.
You know, Peter, but I don't think we've touched the animal yet. I don't think it's wounded at all.
But I actually think the animal is a wounded, dying beast. And let me tell you something about that. Don't celebrate that because it's a big beast. It takes a long time to die, and it might take more than a full human lifetime to die. I think it's been dying for a long time, but as Vin kind of cued us in on last week, it's not the beast dying. It's not like the U.S. government dying. It is the old age dying
right. And
a new age dying. And the question is, how long is there an overlap there? And my advice to anybody, community or not, get the hell out of the cities. Like, you notice that, like, you hear all these rumblings, like, we're going to go out to the rural communities next. No, you're not.
No.
I promise you right now, no, you're not. First of all, you won't get a bunch of big screen TVs in one location. And two, people will shoot you. And you can prosecute them or whatever. But, I mean, I'd rather be judged by 12 than be carried by 6.
And they're not going to hear the shot coming, at least in my case.
No. And so they won't hear it as it happens in my case, right? Like, so anyway, so where
same. Same.
Making gun noises.
This is where the goose sound comes in.
we gotta get that together.
Oh, if someone could get a suppressor, if someone could build a suppressor that sounded like a goose, that'd be amazing.
That would be so dope.
Have to have it. But I think also the cities as a thing are dying. It's part of this order. Like, I'm not saying there'll never be cities again, and you know, the end of the city is here, but new cities can't look like the existing cities. We crammed way too many people into way too small an area, and COVID kind of shows you, hey, that's not really a good idea. And COVID, whether anybody wants to accept this or not, here's your trigger warning, it's coming. It's a cold. It's a coronavirus. It's a cold. And most of the people that kills are older than the average age of people that would die anyway. That doesn't mean I don't value their life, but that's what it is. And what makes that scary is, what if it wasn't? What if this actually was the big scary behemoth that they're making it out to be? What if this something really was going to kill 5 or 6 million people? What if it was something akin?
Died.
Right,
obviously.
Yeah. Well, they would be still dying. What if this was akin to the Black Death that took a third of the global population out?
Yep.
And I don't care where you are, disease can get you anywhere. But when you put, for instance, with New York, and you take 8.6 million people, and you put them in 302 square miles, and then they travel around in buses and in trains through tubes, and you get a disease or an infection in that environment, you're going to get exactly what you saw there. And so I think people will see that. They'll also see that, like, you are vulnerable in the city because there's enough stuff to make the concept of rioting functional, right? And then now they've determined their government won't do the square root of F all when a riot occurs. And in some of our cities now, you've got homeless people taking a crap on the front step of a guy's porch, right? And if he pushes the guy off the porch while he's taking a shit on his porch, they'll arrest him, but they won't do anything about the guy taking a dump. Now, you're not going to build you can't build community with that, right? So you got to get – I know I'm kind of sidelining here, but you got to get away from these metro areas. And that is a mega trend that's happening right now. That's happening. Rents are falling in every major, especially coastal city in the United States. It's going to lead to a complete crash of real estate. And that's an opportunity community, because when you start moving people, people move for a reason. If you can tie into that, that's back to your physical communities and your non-physical communities.
Yeah. But back to what you were saying about the government, it's like, I don't think people really have a good grasp of what a communist.
Uh-oh.
We're losing you. He started talking about the communists. He's getting cut off.
Yeah. Shut
the
him
Russian
down.
Russian wives didn't well, like DICOMs. It, did they?
Yeah, they don't like what I'm saying. So, communist dictatorship, not a good idea. And we've got to make sure that we don't balkanize the United States in this process.
You know, one thing we have to be careful of, you know, we use the word communism, and it's easy to conjure up anger toward communism, is that really what we're dealing with here is fascism. And I'm not talking about Antifa, who really is a fascist, anti-fascist organization.
Right.
I'm talking about our generalized economy in the United States. It's been fascist for as long as anybody here has been alive, and longer than that. And it continues to evolve. And the danger of fascism, the true danger of fascism, is an economic system, is it actually works better than communism, right? So you have less bread lines, et cetera. It looks shinier. If you, like, I don't know if anybody here has seen the series Man in the High Castle on Amazon, but the premise is that the U.S. lost the war and Japan takes over the Western United States, and it's just a slum. And the Nazis took over the Eastern United States, and it looks like 1960s America. You know, all the women are in pretty clothes and all. And the danger of fascism is it's just as deadly, but on the surface, it's nice and shiny. And that lets you sell ideas to people for a lot longer. You can use both of those ideologies to lead gullible people down a bad path, but you can keep them following the guy with the flute for a lot longer with fascism. That is its true danger. What we've done is we've equated concentration camps and fascism to the point where fascism means Hitler, right? And if you look, there's a lot of fascists that have existed that everybody goes, yeah, that guy was a fascist, that ran countries that didn't do it the way Hitler did. So we've muddied that water to where we say, oh, that's fascism, and you say that and people start thinking about gas chambers and stuff like that. And I ain't saying that can't happen. I'm just saying, like, if you define fascism that way, then you won't see it when it's plain as day right in front of you. I guess we're straying from communities here, but that is the threat I see. Now, the dying beast, it is dying, and there is something to be said. If, like, there is a really dangerous thing in that building over there dying, then just stand back, do your own thing, maybe start a little fire in front of the door so it can't come out, let it die. And if your buddy runs in there, you go, you know, he had a good run. He had a good run, man.
Well, to circle back to community, Jack, because you were going down a path there that was pretty good in fascism and communism, overlap with community.
Okay.
The communities that are made by those types of governments are the same. They're organized around similarity. Just like your fourth grade classroom in the government school is a bunch of fourth graders. They're all fourth graders. They're all in the same 1 to 2 year age range. When you look at an educational outcome, that's allowed our teachers to specialize. Part of what this pause of COVID is giving the education system is a view into what it means to be so reliant on teachers that are so specialized on one thing that they can't support the many. And that expands out to community, where if your community is so specialized on one thing, it's going to wither and die because you need that diversity. One of the ways to help avoid the spread of diseases is to have smaller schools if you're going to do it in person. And a better outcome is to have different skill levels and age levels and have the kids helping each other learn, as opposed to putting all people of 10 years of age into this one spot. And I think that is part of the battle. You know, that's on a school level. It's my example. That's the battle we see, is that sameness community pushing back on people self-organizing who are all very different from each other. And then the brilliance of what they do is they call that diversity, and it's sameness. I love it, but I don't want it.
I think that we have a good opportunity here. And when Jack was talking about communism and fascism, I was thinking about how big the stakes are, because I know, you know, every election cycle, everyone's like, this is the biggest one. I'm not talking about the election, but things are really bad right now. And the dying beast government is cracking down really strongly. So I guess I just want to encourage all the listeners that are following along to, if you can, to maybe ramp up your efforts, to maybe make more phone calls, to maybe, if you had that idea that you were sitting on, or you've been meaning to go meet up in person or virtually, to do it, because, you know, I have children, and, sometimes I'm concerned what the future is going to be like for them. I'm always the optimist, but I do think that the response to COVID and all these riots are really opening people's eyes and giving a sense of urgency, even though the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. I think everyone is thinking about in that pause, to go back to Kanye West of all people, the pause, it is a pause, and we need to be asking ourselves, asking everyone around us, encouraging people to ask themselves, what can we do differently?
What do you want?
Yeah, what do you want to see out of this? Because we have the power to build something new. A lot of people feel impotent in that regard, but you know, it just takes some people with some great ideas taking massive action. And we really could spring out of this little COVID era into some really cool, exciting things. And we really ought to, again, because there's so many planks of the Communist Manifesto that have been in place in this country for decades. And now the fascist growth and the whole Trump thing where he's pushing back on the deep state, but he's also extremely authoritarian and these DHS agents, like the time for change is now. And I guess that's one of the reasons why we assembled this podcast group to bring you guys that.
Well, what do you want question is like, maybe that's the question for the audience. I think that's what nobody is asking. Honestly, like just the very, very simple, like, what do you want?
Humans of Earth, what is it that you want?
What do you want? Well, if there was ever a time, at least as long as I've been alive, where that was actually a valid question, like for the first time, like in my life, I feel like, wait a minute, that's actually a valid question where we could be like, education, what do you want? Security, what do you want? Like instead of rioting in the streets that what we have is not what I would like. It's like, well, that's what's missing. That's what's missing from these protests is it's like, well, what do you want? Well, I don't like what's happening. Okay, well, what do you want?
So defund the police.
Yeah, yeah. So if government is a business now, right, then he or she who provides the most services at the lowest price with the most rewards will win that game because it's now consumer, like the humans of the world are now the consumers and the customer, right? And so if government switches from how can we get from them to what can we give them, as a good marketer, Jack knows the more you figure out what they want, you know, and what you're saying, Vin, it's like, yeah, give them what they want and then they'll love you and then they'll give you money and then you'll be able to do your business.
People need to think, what do I want? And then they need to actually say it. And they may as well say it to us and we can talk about it every week. You know what I mean?
And we got
to
have a voting system that is secure, that you can trust that what they're saying is what they're actually is the result on the other end.
The only problem that comes up there is the two groups we talked about earlier, the group of people that just want to be left alone.
Right.
Like if you ask me what I want most, I'll figure it out for myself. Leave me alone. And then the other group of people that just won't leave you alone. And that apparatus of the government and the state is something that we need to be strategic in avoiding. And like when I think of like where I live or where Nicole lives, my life is largely unaffected by government. Now, from a tax standpoint with federal taxes and stuff, yeah, you know, I mean, there's the issue there. And there's some things I'd like to do that are a little bit impinged. But day to day, there's no government here. There isn't. Right. It just doesn't exist. And if you're out in the holler with Nicole, there's no Bearcats rolling through firing guns off or something like that. That's just not happening. And I think that if we can start getting people to ask the question, what do I want, and coming up with proposals and answers, if that makes big changes, fine. But never underestimate the power of that individual making that change inside that individual's own life.
Yeah.
Creating and carving something out. That's why the majority of what I've done for 12 years as a podcaster has not been raging against the machine, right? It's been empowering with knowledge. Here's how to do this thing. Here's how to build a business. Here's how to grow a garden. Here's how to do aquaponics. Here's how to homeschool your kids. Here's how to do research. Here's how to think critically. Like, that's a skill. Like, when I started doing survival podcasts, I never would have believed, if you would have told me in my first month, you know, within a year, you're going to do a show on critical thinking. I would have been like, oh, shit. Like, and I realized, like, that is actually a thing. Yeah. And if we can teach people to ask the question, what do I want? That was one of my 13 steps recently in a series I did. What do I want in my life? And what do I not want in my life? And then say, what are the things that I need to do to make that happen for myself? That's more powerful than any one individual group. And if you create people that do that, they will create groups because I've seen them do it. I've seen them do it left and right, and I've seen those groups fractionalize, and I've seen them even fighting a little bit with each other. But then usually they kind of like go, and then one goes off over here, and one goes off. They do their own shit, and they're both happy, and they forget about each other. Like, and I think that empowering with knowledge and action, and boy, that's a huge question, though. What do you actually want? What do you want it to look like? And if we can try to, in some way, build it so that, again, if you could show an example, if we can get, I don't know, maybe instead of having a cult, right, we all, if we could pick a place, maybe it's Saipan, maybe it's some blowing away town in Arizona or something,
Saipan.
Right?
It's definitely Saipan. It's definitely Saipan.
and just take it over in numbers and then say, well, we're, you know, for police, we're going to have basically a private security and we're going to do all these things. And then maybe we'll find out some of our ideas are stupid and they don't work or they don't work at certain places. But what does work, you'll be able to say, because like, you know, regenerative agriculture, I love it because when people say it doesn't work, you go, well, there it is, there it is, there it is, there it is.
Yeah.
Some of this stuff, we need test beds to be able to prove it works.
Yeah.
I think back to the kids, the absence of public school is a very disempowering place where the question, what do you want, or kids being able to say, this is what I want, it just is non-existent. So hopefully, you know, fast forward with the kids not being in public school and more homeschooling taking place, maybe there will be more people that just naturally ask that question throughout their lives.
Yeah, we need to teach our kids to ask themselves what they want and how to get it. I think that's one of the most important things we can do. And I just say to anybody out there listening tonight, if you've been thinking about homeschooling, it will never be a better time to do it than right now. And if you're a grandparent like I am and you're willing to step out and do this for your grandkids, have a conversation with your kids now, because most of your kids are finding out that their kids are not going back to school in August. They're going to have 8 weeks or whatever, this virtual school crap. If they're going to be home anyway, get them out of that stuff. Get them tuned into a good curriculum, roll your own, use something like Excellus that I'm using, whatever. Ron Paul's career, I don't care what, anything but the demon. Like, you know, when it comes to the homeschool thing, like, you want a community? Start homeschooling.
Right.
You know what? I don't even understand how we didn't get there till now. If you start homeschooling your kids and you go out on like Nextdoor or Facebook or whatever and your local community and say, I'm homeschooling, I want help, you will find a community that will grab you and suck you in because they're so evangelical about their ideas. And I mean that is the homeschool thing, not in a religious way.
Right.
And man, get into that. And then you'll find like, hey, when you want, you know, your kid to learn shop class, there's some guy down the road that builds cabinets that can bring the kids in and do that and get it going that way. Because what makes me think of is a quote by Malcolm X, right? He said one time, only a fool would let his enemy educate his children.
Ooh.
All right. Now, if that doesn't like punch you in the gut with reality, because even if you didn't like, if you didn't think the government was your enemy in 1985, that's one thing. But today, if you don't think the government is your enemy as a person that craves freedom, I'm going to tell you, you need a freaking fluoride filter for your tap water. Right? Because that is the only explanation I have at this point.
There are people who still believe what's being written by the media.
Yeah, a lot
crazy.
Of
them right now. Even
are you surprised? Does that surprise you, though?
It disappoints me.
That's the word.
One of y'all, I think it was Xavier, was asking earlier, like, what do we need to do in order to create this culture with the general public of wanting changes or more independence or freedom? And I was saying on the last podcast, like, the general public, like Nicole pointed out, they're still buying it hook, line, and sinker, even though it's so obvious now to some of us, especially with the COVID stuff. Like Jack's just hammering on it. I listened to his podcast from recently where the whole podcast, he's just destroying so easily and logically this narrative that's being put out. But at the end of the day, people are just buying it up just like they did after 9/11. But that doesn't really matter because they don't change the course of history. And at the same time, like, as an anarchist, I'm for anarcho-toleration, which I like to call it, where, like, if somebody wants to be governed and they want to have a democratic socialist state or whatever, then they can do that. Just let us do this over here. Try this over here.
Right. Exactly. That's the idea of the system. Like, because Black Mirror had an episode that perfectly outlined Fyron, and that was, like, you get a ratings, and like, it could go real bad. And there, and you can also immediately tax your constituents. You don't have to go through the IRS or collect. You just reach into their wallet, right? It's kind of like Jack kicking out somebody in one of the Facebook groups. It's like you don't have to go through a process. that in the wrong hands is really bad. But if you have, if it's going to go that way anyway, it's like, well, let's build it and make sure that we, the good people of Earth, have that system and they can go and do that and we'll compete because that's what history is. Right.
Competition.
It seems really bad if it's confined by geography the way a nation state is.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem so bad if it was truly a world of virtual nations where if I just got tired of frickin' Peter because he's a dick to me. And he's running Peter Town, right? And I can just say,
damn it, Peter.
I'm tired of Peter being a dick, and I want to go over to Vin Town, and I can just move myself and my assets because it's all electronic, you know. And that's kind of the anarcho dream, right? That's kind of the anarcho dream that we can choose our own form of governance, and the commonality is simply that I don't get to take John's stuff, and I don't get to hurt him. Like if you ask me what I really wanted, I would like the total governance of the world to be summed up in don't hurt people and don't take their stuff. And like anything else, like, go screw yourself and figure it out for yourself. You don't like what's going on, Karen, bye. Like, that's – but I just don't see that happening anytime soon.
Right. The Cathars did that. The Branch Davidians did that. There are people who have done that, and they get wiped out by the larger organism that wants to eat everybody.
Yeah, so, like, it's harder to wipe it out. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Like, the technology we have now adds there is not necessarily a geographical point where you take something out.
Yeah.
Something could get taken out, but it's not going to take out the entire infrastructure if you're organized.
It has to be holographic, right? Like, and decentralized enough, but have a central control mechanism that if it breaks, that each little like pod has its own functional system.
You got something down there, Peter? I think Peter muted.
You're on mute.
You're muted.
He's on mute mode.
All right, I'm here.
There he is.
I have a friend. His name is Pierre Bielan, and he's actually a doctor, a professor at Oklahoma State University. And there is actually an agorist hardcore who is in the system. And I was writing an article today and I sent it to him and I said, what do you think of this? And he said, maybe you should mention this. And I said, well, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to quote you. And what he quoted was, agorism in action creates its own institutions and builds the institutions of a free society within the shell of the old. When people start offering services, they create markets and prices. When they have conflicts, they find means to arbitration and protection. That's what's so beautiful with counter-economics. By withdrawing your support, stop feeding the beast, and start acting economically in freedom, you bring about the market institutions we will need and must rely on when the state fails. And it sounds like what we believe is that the state is going to fail.
Yeah. Yeah, that's beautiful. Spot on. Well, I think we should probably wrap up here. I know we could go on for another hour or so. Does anyone have anything they want to throw out before we shut her down? I think that's a good spot to on that quote because it was so poignant and punchy and some of the stuff that we covered in the program too. I hope the listeners are feeling inspired and empowered. And, of course, we're a participatory community, so you can email us if you have any questions or show topics. And look out soon. We're going to have a Facebook group and then Telegram groups as well that you guys can participate on. We can build community. Anybody have any parting words?
I'd just like to say the website again, unloosethegoose.com. That's where, as these pieces are built out, you can. It'll be the hub to find social connections and to sign up for the e-bulletin and that sort of thing.
Yeah, anybody's got it. Go ahead, Jack. Sorry.
I would say, since we're a weekly show, guys, make sure you fill out the little email form and stay in touch with us because we'll probably come up with some ideas during the week. And maybe we'll even be able to have some things that can make future episodes a little more interactive if you are on the list and know what's coming.
Oh, that would be cool. We could have guests and have a group discussion. I wanted to say that I am very thankful to be here. This has been a very enlightening and empowering conversation for me personally. So it's really cool to be a part of this.
Cool. Right on. All right. Well, this has been Unloose the Goose, our third podcast, and we want to thank you for tuning in. And remember to go to unloosethegoose.com, sign up for the e-newsletter so we can stay in touch. And we hope that you will continue to live free and check us out next week. Peace. Cool.
All right, guys, cool.
Okay, John, can you hand me controls back?
Yeah.
I stopped recording. All right, guys, I'm running low, and this thing doesn't convert until I dip out. So thank you guys very much, and I will.